Welcome to another Open Airways podcast. Today we have Linda joining us. Linda, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Linda Gorish. I'm a paramedic and an EMS educator in White Bear Lake, Minnesota at Century College. I'm the EMT coordinator and also teach in the paramedic level. And I currently also work as an on-call paramedic for North Memorial Ambulance.
I hear you have an interesting story to share with us today.
I have a story to relate about a woman named Jeanette. And the story occurred many years ago before I actually was registered as a paramedic. So it was in my learning curve as I was going through the paramedic school. And she still reminds me of many of the factors that we come across when we're dealing with an elderly patient. So yes, I'd like to tell you about Jeanette. One of the things to be aware of, obviously, as we work in the field, our patients are going to include elderly people. And the 2010 census doesn't have the numbers posted yet, but at the 2000 census, I found that individuals aged 60 years and over in the United States, there are 45.8 million of them. If you looked at the 65 years and over, there's 35 million of them, and that was at 2000. At that time, the mean age of those older than 65, the mean age was a little over 75 years old. And as time continues, the proportion of those that are greater than 85 continues to be on the increase. One of the things that we are finding or note is that there are some things that are common as conditions that we find in the elderly populations more so than some of the other age groups. And that would include basal cell carcinoma, degenerative osteoarthritis, dementia, herpes zoster, hip fracture, osteoporosis, Parkinsonian symptoms, polymyalgia, pressure ulcers, prostate cancer, stroke, and some conditions that are almost exclusively in the elderly would be accidental hypothermia, urinary incontinence, and normal pressure hydrocephalus. One of the circumstances that I recall was working years ago with a lady in a nursing home. I was in my first job as a nursing assistant, and I was in training for the paramedic program. And Jeanette was in this nursing home as a result of having a significant stroke. She had lost strength in her right arm. She had some facial paralysis, so it was a little bit difficult to speak, and she was wheelchair-bound, able to stand and walk with assistance, but most of the time wheelchair-bound. What this did for Jeanette was it obviously caused a big issue in her life. She was an angry woman. She obviously didn't like being in the nursing home. She was easily frustrated, and we got the sense that she was really trying to control what she still had available to her in her life. And I believe that she also had some depression going on. Well, as a person wanting to help, and my job is as a nursing assistant at the time, some of the cares that Jeanette needed assistance with became some of the jobs I needed to do on a regular basis. Well, Jeanette was known as difficult, and Jeanette was the patient or the client that you kind of didn't want to go and help Jeanette because you knew it was going to be a struggle, but if you could get somebody else to do it, your day would go fine, except you knew that Jeanette was going to be a problem for whoever took care of her. And part of the things that were difficult was that Jeanette had a specific routine. And as a part of her dealing with her circumstance, she was a very manipulative individual. And she tried to control the situation and tried to have you do everything for her. Well, being the newest on the wing, I often got Jeanette. And Jeanette and I tried to find a happy medium. And sometimes we didn't find the happy medium, and she would be upset with me, and I would be upset with the attitude, and it was difficult. And I found that I was also not enjoying going into Jeanette's room to help her. So at one point, I decided that there has to be a way to communicate and get along better. And so one day, I go in, and before we even start the usual routine, I tell Jeanette that I believe that she's unhappy in her circumstance, but I know that she's got some ability, and I think that she should do as much as she's able to do. Well, I don't think she really liked that to begin with, and sure enough, the day I announced that the stuff that I know you can do, you are doing. We had our little battle as far as she still wanted me to brush her teeth. Well, her good arm, she was left-handed, she could brush her teeth, so I refused. I imagine that her blood pressure went up because the next thing that she insisted I do that I knew she could do, I didn't do, and the whole event became quite difficult, to the point when we finally got done, I realized I'd been in her room double the time to get her ready. And immediately after I left, her light goes on and a nurse goes down to see what Jeanette needs. And I'm reported as being not understanding, difficult, and whatever else she may have said. So as the story goes, I'm mad, she's mad, but I felt I was in the right to tell her that I'm there to support her, but I'm not going to do what she can do. In talking with the head nurse agreed. And the head nurse and Jeanette and I had a little bit of a come to reality session. And as it turns out, I began to be the one Jeanette requested. We developed our boundaries, we began our communication. She realized that I really did care, that I was going to help in every way that I could, but that I wouldn't do what she could do. And it became a friendship during the time that I was working at that nursing home. I still remember her because as I've worked in the EMS and have dealt with a number of different people, I realized that a lot of the things that I was witnessing were things that are common in some way to elderly patients. A person having a stroke is now faced with inability to speak well, or the inability to do simple skills that are a normal part of their day. The loss of their independence is so damaging to their psyche. Loss of privacy. This woman is now in a nursing home where she may have been taking care of herself and doing well in her own home. I realized that with all of those changes, that emotionally, well-being of this elder patient is a very important thing to consider. And so, when I look back at my Jeanette experience, I realized that I was learning already that there are things that we can do that may help alleviate some of the distress that this elderly patient might be having, especially if they're not feeling well or they're fearing that whatever their circumstance is isn't going to go well. We have to be able to communicate and adjust and relay empathy for their circumstance. At the same time, we can be the professional and do the care that we need to do, but also at the same time realizing this is a person that needs to be assured that they are getting good care and you care about them. So I've found since the Jeanette experience that your communication style, your demeanor, and overall your general approach to an older patient, if you are able to approach with kindness and concern, that the result is often a good one.
That's great. Do you think in Jeanette's case that, I don't know, if do nursing homes typically have any sort of mental health consultants or, you know, or therapists or anything like that?
In the nursing home setting, there are likely access to social workers and maybe the visiting clergy or chaplains that might be available. This experience happened in the late 70s.
Okay.
And I don't know what the services were that were available. I'm hoping that things would have improved and maybe that there would be resources like that available.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like when the elderly start to deal with this loss of independence, I mean, certainly there's nursing there to help from a physical standpoint, but mm-hmm. I mean, and it sounds like you and, you know, the head nurse helped to talk her through, you know, some of the more mental or emotional issues involved with that, in addition to you, of course, helping with the physical limitations of stroke or other, physical disability. So, have you continued to work with the elderly since, I assume, probably less so now than you did, you know,
when less you were... specifically in a continued or daily care kind of situation, but certainly continuing in the role as a paramedic responding to calls. We don't necessarily have a lot of time to deal with the fear factor that they might have. But we can help them by keeping them informed of what it is we're doing, why we're doing it, what signs are indicating to us that, yes, this does require us to take you to the hospital. And when we're on the way to the hospital, I think one of the best things we can do is to engage in light conversation with them on the way, if that's a possibility. Having an interest, noting signs, things, items that were around them when you pick them up, maybe from their bedroom. Maybe you note that there's a lot of photos of apparently family members. You might start a conversation. You just put in the words, get them started, and they're being able to talk to somebody about their family or about their hobby or the fact that they're missing the bingo game because they're now in the ambulance going to the hospital because they fell and they might have broken their hip. I advocate being as confident in your communication with an older person as you might be with your best friend. And hopefully, if we can, you know, remember that a lot of things might be going on in their minds at this point. If it's a fall and a broken hip, they might be fearing that they're losing their home because now they're going to be nursing home, or there could be a variety of things. Mm-hmm. They might just simply appreciate the effort in having someone to talk to, even in that short time from the location to the hospital.
Yeah, I think that's a great thing that, you know, I'm sure you stress that to your students, because I'm sure for a student's perspective, you know, maybe when they have an elderly patient contact, they feel like they've drawn the short end of the stick or whatever. And, you know, you just have, you really have to see that from a positive perspective and just be, you know, be talkative, be friendly, be, you know, be their friend for the next 20 minutes.
I would agree.
Yeah.
I think one of the most difficult sounds in the back of the ambulance is silence. No conversation with the patient. I think that can be harmful and maybe cause more panic, more fear of the unknown for the patient. I don't know how many times I've talked about the weather or whatever was blaring on the TV when we came into the room. Something. It doesn't always matter what that conversation point is, but the fact that you're making the effort to try to be conversational, and sometimes you make a little bit of effort, they'll do all the talking, and you may learn more things that you may have needed anyway for your history gathering.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot of benefit to that.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for joining us today and sharing your story. It's very interesting.
Thank you.
Open Airways podcasts are produced by FISDAP with support from emsresponder.com. All recordings express the opinions and experience of the speaker and do not constitute legal or medical advice. This and other recordings can be found at www.openairways.net.